Actually, I mean, most people have got completely the wrong idea about working for MI5. It's not really a glamorous job at all.
Penny Foster is a former member of Britain's Internal Security Service, MI5. After almost 8 years working as an intelligence officer, she resigned in April.
The fact is, I mean, a great deal of the work you do is tedious and extreme. I mean, most days you spend sifting through hundreds of pages of very mundane information, cross-referencing it, typing it, and eventually just filing it all away. Well, that's why it's nice to get out occasionally and do a few burglaries.
This week on Dell Special, we shall be looking at the activities of our state security service, and in particular, those activities which relate to a highly secret establishment sited in East Anglia, the Ministry of Defence Research Unit at Southborough. In particular, we shall be addressing ourselves to two questions. Have the organs of state security been allowed to get completely out of control, and why? Many of the security operations with which this program will be concerned were mounted as a direct response to the broadcasting of a previous edition of Delve in the summer of 1983. In order to remind you of what that program contained, here are a few extracts. The first is part of an interview with sheep farmer Robert Clark, whose land lies across the valley from the research unit.
My great-grandfather was the first clerk to farm here. There's been some changes since then, you know. Tractors, fertilizers, electric shears, and nowadays, of course, all my sheep are coloured mauve.
Yes.
At Naff, they built that unit thing across the valley. Next day, I noticed the sheep were slightly bluish. Day after that, they were a bit darker, until eventually they were mauve.
Hmm. Did that surprise you at all?
No, not really. They're funny creatures, sheep, aren't they? Nothing they do will ever surprise me.
Mm-hmm. What do your customers think about it when you take them to market?
I don't take them to market. Some chaps from the government do that for me.
Really? Why?
Well, they said it was like one of these common market rules, you know, that mole sheep must be handed over to government officials for selling. They said it's so they can avoid one of them mole sheep mountains.
I spoke next to Mr. and Mrs. Slater, a couple whose house adjoined the research unit's grounds, and I asked them, how had it affected their lives?
Well, for a start, there's a vibration. Can I feel it coming up through the floor?
Yes.
You get used to them after a while, though.
Do you really?
Oh, they get worse at night. Sometimes we come down in the morning, and old Fetch has moved out of the hall. And that's not a very good way to start it there now, is it?
No, I'm sure it isn't.
That's when we get the smoke as well. Yes.
Tell me about the smoke.
Well, it's mold. It gets into everything. Carpets, upholstery, clothes. Well, you probably notice everything's mold in here, aren't you?
Yes, I did notice that, yes.
That's not
from choice. No, we prefer a nice deep blue.
One organisation which has, over the years, issued many warnings about the research unit at Southborough is the environmentalist group Leaf Life. Kate Fisher is their spokesperson. This is what she had to say in our 1983 programme.
We're very worried about their methods of waste disposal. Every month, drums of highly toxic waste turn up all over the place. One was found in a telephone box, two had been dumped in someone's skip, and four more were discovered in the lift of a multi-storey car park, which was very nearly disastrous. When they were found, three of the four drums were already heavily corroded.
What caused this corrosion?
Have you ever been in a lift of a multi-storey car park?
Oh, yes, I see. I understand that you're also very concerned about a pipeline leading from the unit which discharges waste directly into the North Sea.
Yes, we are. There's some evidence that it's affecting the marine ecology of the surrounding area.
What sort of evidence?
2 weeks ago, a local fisherman caught this herring.
Now, I'm not really much of an expert on herrings, but should it be purple?
No, of course it shouldn't be purple. It's polluted.
Soon after that interview was recorded, Leaf Life decided to mount an operation to find out just what exactly was coming out of that pipeline. The plan was for two Leaf Life volunteers, known to me only as Bob and Mike, to go out in a motorized rubber dinghy and take samples from the water above the pipe outlet. I was invited along as an observer.
Well, here I am in the dinghy with Bob and Mike. The sea's fairly calm. We're making good speed. And in a few moments, we'll be rounding the point of land known as Crab Point, which means we've got about 100 yards to go through the pipeline. Here we are now. We're rounding Crab Point now. I think Bob has just spotted something in the water ahead of us. There's definitely something ahead. It's pink and glowing. It's a large patch of pink, glowing water. We're heading straight for it. We're in it now. It's all around us. The water all around us is pink. There's behind us a black slick has just appeared. And the black slick behind us, it seems to be coming from our dinghy. It's rubber. And as I speak, the dinghy we're in is dissolving, just plain dissolving. Blobs of rubber are oozed. He's got a puncture. A puncture has appeared on the side of the dinghy where the wall is almost completely. There goes the engine. The engine has just dropped off into the water, which is still glowing pink.
Okay.
Bob and Mike have grabbed two of the three paddles which were lying in the bottom of the dinghy beside me, and they're now attempting to paddle us to the shore. It's a brave effort, this. These two men clearly do not intend to go down without a fight. I feel I'm in the presence here.
Shut up and stop paddling, you stupid...
Oh, I've just been invited to join them. Mike has just handed me a paddle quite hard there.
Get paddling!
But
At that point, my tape recorder ceased working because Bob hit it with a paddle. Several moments later, tired and wet and after a considerable struggle, we managed to reach the shore. This was also very severely polluted. As a direct result of that incident, the government was impelled to take the Southborough Research Unit to court, where it was subsequently found guilty of destroying 17 miles of coastline. The unit was fined £500 and given 2 years to pay. Leaf Life have yet to reimburse the BBC for the tape recorder. On that same 1983 edition of Delve, I spoke to the Southborough Research Unit's chief administrator, Peter Forbes, about the effects the unit was having on the environment.
Of course, the so-called effects have been grossly exaggerated. At no time have we exceeded the set legal limits for discharge of this type of waste.
That is presumably because there are no set legal limits for this particular type of waste.
Precisely. That's because the type of waste we are discharging is not known to be dangerous.
No, that's because the type of waste you're discharging you've only just invented. No one has yet had an opportunity to find out just how dangerous the stuff is.
It's an unnecessarily pessimistic view of the situation.
Is it, Mr. Forbes? Do you know that the environmentalist group Leaf Life have in their possession a purple herring?
So what?
They say it was polluted by waste from your unit. Don't you think the public have a right to know what you're spending public money on when it affects public land?
No.
Why not?
It would not be in the public interest.
And that concludes our extracts from the 1983 edition of Delve. It was as a direct result of those reports and interviews that farmer Robert Clark, Mr. and Mrs. Slater, and Leaf Life became the targets of a special MI5 operation, which was supervised by the then MI5 intelligence officer, Penny Foster.
The morning after your programme was broadcast, the assistant director ordered me to open files on Robert Clark and the Slaters.
Why?
Well, he suspected them of being communists.
On what grounds?
On the grounds that he suspected everybody of being a communist. Well, he just hadn't heard of those three before.
Did you protest?
I certainly did. I mean, apart from everything else, I was already very overworked. I was in charge of the entire surveillance of the National Council for Civil Liberties. I mean, that's a big job in itself, because they're watched very closely.
For what reason?
Because they campaign against people being watched.
That isn't actually in itself subversive.
Oh, it is to an organisation that gets paid for watching people. I mean, if the NCCL had its way, most of MI5 would be made redundant. MI5 regards that as very subversive.
What did the assistant director say, then, when you protested about having to watch Robert Clark and the Slaters?
Nothing. But a few days later, I noticed he was having me watched.
So Robert Clark and the Slaters were placed under surveillance. Mr. Clark remembers one form which this took.
Oh, yes. I remember one week my dog Jess got very irritable. He kept shaking his head round and barking. It got so bad that finally I took him to the vet. The vet took one look at him and said he got a microphone in his ear. He took it out and showed it to me. I thought that was a bit unusual, really. But he told me a lot of farmers round here had experienced pretty much the same thing. So I knew some of that one.
Penny Foster again.
In all the time that we had him under surveillance, well, Robert Clark never behaved even remotely suspiciously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this convinced the assistant director that he must be an extremely highly trained agent. So he ordered me to arrange for Clark's farm to be surrounded by a squad of armed men, which meant handing over responsibility to the chemical police.
The chemical police? Who are they?
Well, they're a very secret branch of the police force who are authorised to carry highly specialised equipment.
What sort of highly specialised equipment?
Artillery guns, flamethrowers, stuff like that.
Did you think it was necessary to surround Robert Clark's farm with artillery guns and flamethrowers?
Me? No, but I didn't mind. I mean, it left me a lot free to work on the Slaters.
Why exactly were the Slaters regarded as subversive?
Well, it was partly because they'd appeared on your programme, of course. But I think the main reason was the feeling that people who were prepared to live in such appalling conditions must be doing it for an ulterior motive.
At the time that the MI5 effort against them was at its most strenuous, I went back to see the Slaters.
Well, we know we're being watched.
Oh, we're being watched.
How do you know?
Seen them.
There's two men in that creepy old van just outside. No two across the street, ten and sell ice cream.
That window cleaner at the household, too. He's been doing the same window for a week.
Right. Yesterday, one of the ice cream sellers came over and asked not to close our curtains at night.
Not a very nice feeling at all. Makes you want to keep checking your flies all the time.
Well, then, that's bad enough for that. I mean, it's not even as if they're doing any good, is it?
No. I mean, here they are, supposed to be watching the house. Not one of them's noticed the burglary.
You've been burgled? When?
Last week.
Ah, they didn't take any what you might call our valuables, how did them?
Nope.
What did they take?
My diary, my dress book, an old postcard my uncle sent me from Yugoslavia.
Never touched a video.
No. Did you report it to the police?
Say?
What did they say?
Said it's done a lot of work of an unscrupulous band
and socialist historians.
Send a man round to check it out, but they haven't. Now the phone's been on the plate, it's very difficult to get hold of them.
What's wrong with the phone?
You try and see. Go on, you just pick it up. What does...
Hello? Who's that?
What do you say, Officer Tango, over?
What's up?
Hello? This is David Langer from BBC Radio's Delve programme. Whom am I speaking to, please? Hello? Who's there?
Hello, is that you, Mum?
What?
Mum?
Who am I speaking to, please?
Hello?
What's happening, Norm?
Oh, I don't know. I think there's a bomb on the line.
No, this is David Lander from BBC Radio's Delve programme. Do you work for British Intelligence?
British Intelligence, James? That's a contradiction in terms. Look at, never mind, Mum, I'll call again.
No, don't hang up, wait!
Was it Australia?
Yes.
That's right, this always gets rerouted there.
Oh, and we get the bill.
To discover why the Slaters' telephone was behaving in that manner, I spoke to a British telecom engineer who gave me the following explanation.
Well, the effect is entirely due to radio interference, which occurs with computer control systems in which there are integrated circuit boards. It's as simple as that.
Isn't it a much more likely explanation that the Slaters are being bugged?
Well, I suppose that might be the...
Hello? 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 Meanwhile... The environmentalist group, Leaf Life, were experiencing problems too.
Well, the break-ins are getting pretty serious now, yes.
You've been broken into?
Oh, we've been broken into regularly since we were founded. The thing is, they never used to take anything. Just messed up our filing system a bit, you know. Only this time, it's different. They've taken the purple herring.
Did the intruders leave any clues?
Yes. One of them dropped a piece of paper. And as far as we can make out, it seems to be a Ministry of Defence overtime form.
In view of the worrying implications of what Kate Fisher had told us, we decided that Delve would be justified in attempting a minor deception. To this end, I made the following phone call. For reasons that I hope will become clear later, it was necessary for me to disguise my voice, and since you'll probably not be able to recognise it, I should tell you that I am the second person to speak.
Hello?
Hello? Is that the special branch?
Who wants to know?
Well, you don't know me.
I bet we do.
Look, for now, let's just say I'm a patriot with important information about someone working at the BBC. He's engaged in subversive activities.
Hold on. I'll put you through to the right section.
BBC subversive section. Can I help you?
I've got some information for you about a David Lander.
Hold on, I'll go and get his file.
Right, okay, yes.
Right, David Lander, 6'1", brown eyes, blood group O, scar on left thigh, sleeps with a missus.
Yes, that's the man, yes.
What do you want to tell me?
Well, he's investigating into the Southborough Research Unit.
Yes, we know. Look, we're very busy here, so if that's...
Oh, no. Wait a minute, there's more. He's got hold of the results.
What results?
Well, you know, on the herring.
I see. Do you know where he's keeping them?
Well, at his flat. In the study, in the Southborough file.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Immediately after I finished that phone call, my producer... The sound engineer and I set up our recording equipment in my flat, and then, in darkness and hidden behind my desk, we waited. at about 2 o'clock in the morning, on hearing a noise outside my window, we turned on the tape recorder. This is what followed.
Hello, I'm David Lander from BBC Radio's Delve programme, and this is my flat. What are you doing here?
Right, I'm, don't worry, sir. I'm a police officer, and I'm here to investigate a burglary.
There hasn't been a burglary yet.
Hasn't there? Sorry, sir, false alarm. Right, I'll be off then.
Wait, excuse me, what's that in your hand?
This? Oh, it's a file, sir. Actually, it's one of your files, sir. Yes, you're right. I am, in fact, a burglar, sir. You'd better call the police.
I have absolutely no intention of calling the police until you've answered a few of my questions. Who are you working for?
Me? I don't work for anyone, sir. I'm a fully self-employed burglar.
Nonsense. You belong to Special Branch, don't you?
No way. I'm my own boss, I am.
Who ordered you to break into my flat? But you might as well tell me the truth. I'm prepared to carry on asking you questions all night, if necessary.
I demand to see my lawyer.
But you haven't even been arrested yet.
I think there's someone at the door.
Jeez, thank you. I can tell that for myself. Who is it?
Open up. This is the police. All right, where's the burglar?
Over here.
All right, you're under arrest.
It's a fair cop. I'll come quietly.
Just a minute. I never reported a burglary.
No, sir. Anonymous tip-off, sir. Come on, lad. You're nicked.
Oh, dear. It looks like another long stretch for me, right enough.
Don't you want me to make a statement?
Yes, sir. Of course we do. Tell you what. Post it to us. Our address is in the book. Good night.
We decided that the time had come to speak to the senior police officer responsible for the Southborough area, Chief Constable Alan Layton. I asked him first what he thought about this recent apparent epidemic of burglaries.
Regrettably, burglary is a very common form of crime, sir.
But in the particular burglaries I'm concerned with, very little seems to have been stolen, does it? Can we start perhaps with the Slaters? Now, why would an ordinary burglar want to take away their address book?
Well, presumably, once the thief had broken in, he didn't fancy any of their other possessions. Apart from anything else, I believe they're all mauve, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Go on.
Well, on discovering that, he presumably decided he'd go off and rob someone else instead. One of the Slater's friends, for instance. Which is why he took the address book.
What about the diary?
Well, I'm only guessing, but perhaps the plan was to burgle these friends on a night when they were going to be out socialising with the Slaters.
And the postcard from Yugoslavia?
Oh, we are currently investigating the possibility that the burglar may perhaps be a homesick Yugoslavian.
One of your men suggested that it was probably the work of a social historian.
The two ideas are not entirely incompatible, sir. The person we're looking for might indeed be a homesick Yugoslavian social historian.
Surely, Chief Constable, this person, if he exists, must be extremely...
I'm sorry, sir. I'm afraid I cannot answer any more questions about his identity. Otherwise, if he's listening, you might realise we're on to him.
Very well. What about the break-ins at the offices of Leaflife? The only thing ever taken from there was a purple herring. And the thieves left behind an overtime sheet.
Yes. Now, that is very worrying. You see, it suggests a new type of crime. So highly organised, it employs a shift system.
Have you questioned the man who was arrested at my flat in London?
Not as yet, no.
Where is he?
Well, that's a bit embarrassing, actually. He escaped.
He escaped from the police?
Yes, just got clean away. Totally clean away.
I see. So you organised a search? And what would your advice be to anyone spotting him?
On no account arrest him. That could be very awkward. Dangerous. In any case, he's unlikely still in Britain.
Is
he? Oh, yeah. It's probably halfway to Paraguay. In fact, he should be there by now.
Chief Constable, have you given any thought to the possibility that these burglaries might have been committed by British intelligence officers?
Because of the rumours put around by such as yourself, I felt obliged to look into that so-called possibility, yes. And may I say, MI5 were extremely helpful. They showed me all around their headquarters in Battersea, and I didn't find a shred of evidence to link them with any break-in at all. So, you see, it's all merely wild speculation.
Yes. Of course, MI5 don't have their headquarters in Battersea.
They do, Mr. Lander. They took me to them. I looked over the entire building. There were spies there and everything.
We subsequently discovered that the address to which Chief Constable Layton had been taken is that of a disused grain store. It was at this point that we decided the matter was so serious that we should take it up with the government minister responsible, Sir James Hitchfield. Earlier this week, he agreed to come into the studio to be interviewed.
Minister, if I can deal first with the Southborough Research Unit, there has been widespread concern about the effect it's having on the environment. What would you say to allay such concern?
Calm down. We know what we're doing,
there's nothing to worry about.
But in the course of this programme, we've already heard suggestions that it's been responsible for changes in the weather, damage to the land, widespread air and sea pollution.
Yes, but do you know how many jobs it provides?
No.
Hundreds, Mr. Lander.
But if it's as destructive to the environment...
Mr. Lander, are you saying that you would deny those workers the dignity of full-time employment? I hope not.
Well, then can we perhaps turn to the security aspects of the unit? A number of dogs' ears have been found to contain microphones.
Well, I can't comment on that. It's a medical matter.
Minister, more and more people are voicing their concern that we're moving rapidly towards a police state.
Yes, well, now, I do resent that sort of talk. It seems to imply that there's something wrong with the idea of a police state.
What about surveillance?
The whole business about surveillance has been grossly exaggerated.
Well, has it? I mean, in the course of our investigations for this programme, we've discovered strong evidence to suggest that MI5 conducts break-ins, it taps phones and bugs people's homes on a massive scale.
Oh.
Indeed, yesterday I discovered that I myself was being followed.
Of course you aren't being followed, Mr. Lander. Like your producer said, this whole thing has made you completely paranoid.
It hasn't. How did you know my producer said that?
Because I was there when he said it, just before we started to record the interview.
But he didn't say it then. He said it yesterday evening when we were working at my flat.
Mr. Lander, aren't you getting just a little bit carried away?
Have you had my flat bugged, Minister?
Of course not. You're overtired, you've been working too hard. You should take your doctor's advice and get some rest.
My doctor told me that at his surgery. Does that mean that he's bugged as well?
No, you're being absurd. Clearly, this interview is at an end.
Minister, this interview is not at an end. I still have two more questions I want to put to you.
The answers are yes to the first one and, of course, not to the second. Good day, Mr. Lander.
The question I had intended putting to the minister, to which he had answered yes, was, are you entirely happy with the conduct of the security services under your control? And the question to which his answer was, of course not, was, has there ever been an abuse of their powers? It's doubtful that we will now ever get to the whole truth about the Southborough Research Unit security operations. As we heard in a surprise announcement made earlier this week, the unit itself has now been closed down indefinitely. To try to find out why, I returned to the site to discuss this strange turn of events with the former chief administrator of the unit, Peter Forbes.
It's really quite simple. The decision to shut it down was made in the interests of safety.
Yes, now in 1983 you assured me that this unit was perfectly safe and that nothing on earth could possibly go wrong with it.
That's right, I did, and it was perfectly safe. It's just that our standards of safety have gone up a bit since then.
But surely, if it was perfectly safe then it must still be perfectly safe now.
You see, all through history, people's ideas of perfection have changed, haven't they?
Well,
of course, even by today's standards, the unit was extremely, highly safe, but it wasn't quite perfectly safe, you see. And so, because we're perfectionists, we closed it down. Just to be on the safe side. Although, of course, we always were very much on the safe side. Well over, in fact. Look, so the odd herring went purple. So what?
Even though the research unit is now closed, the security debate which it has prompted will certainly rage on. The question is Britain now moving inexorably towards the day when it will become a police state? Or has that day already come? And if it has, why haven't we seen a drop in the crime rate? These questions still have yet to be answered. But let's end this week with a final look at the Slaters, who have now moved into a detached and desolate house in the middle of Dartmoor.
Well, after all the trouble we had in the old place, we wanted to get completely away from it all, didn't we?
Sure, yes.
Did you feel rather isolated or where?
Oh, no. So we're not entirely alone, are we?
No.
See, look out of the window.
Over on that hill in the distance, the man in the cherry picker watching us with the binoculars.
Where?
There, look. Next to the gamekeeper. Standing there with that machine gun.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's a pity, really. You know, you never seem to use it on our burglars.
Delve Special was presented by David Lander with the assistance of Stephen Fry. Studio production...